Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 103 of the Rise Up Good Witch podcast, a radical approach to herbalism, self-care, and the tarot. This is your host, Tavi Elise. Thanks for joining us. Welcome back to this space. Happy tail end of Taurus season. Happy end of this chapter of eclipse season. I am returning from taking a short pod break in April from editing and recording, which April was, I don't know how else to say it. It was a truly wild month for me. So much energy, movement, transformation, change, and letting go. I taught two different herbal medicine classes, and I also went on a four-day writing retreat on the Oregon coast with Corporeal Writing, which is a local radical queer literary squadron kind of headed by one of my favorite authors. And Corporeal lovingly awarded me a scholarship so that I could attend this retreat with about 30 other writers. This is actually the first proper writing retreat I've ever been on, and without going heavy into the details, it was just one of the most meaningful, creative, and spiritual experiences of my life. And in appropriate eclipse season fashion, I sort of feel like a different person on the other side of it. So much so that in the next episode of this podcast, after this one, it's just going to be a solo story episode dedicated in part to some of the lessons that I walked away with from the woods and the ocean, holding close to my heart. It's a larger story about life revolutions and tree medicine that I've been holding on to for a long time. So I'm really excited to release that in the next few weeks. Stay tuned for that. Last month, I also kicked off the first of our monthly plant deep dive classes on the Patreon. So I'm just going to take a moment here to plug what's happening with those and a few little announcements about what's going on in the Patreon right now. Y'all, maybe it's the bitter former gifted kid in me who is trying to fill the void left by constant book reports of my youth. Or maybe it's neurodivergence. But dang, I really love doing in-depth walkthroughs of different medicinal plants and sharing some facts and perspectives and doing my own research to learn things that I didn't know about plants, even plants I'm already acquainted with, and perspectives that folks might not be familiar with from their own experiences. I'm choosing two plants per month, and each month it's going to be about an hour-long monthly class, and I'm trying to select plant allies to work with and talk about who are growing in the current season, at least where I live in the northern hemisphere of the Pacific Northwest. For April, we talked at length about nettles and magnolia, and that class is actually up and ready to view for patrons at all levels because for this first one, I want to give folks a chance to experience my classes accessibly and, yeah, kind of see what my teaching style is like. And in that same vein of accessibility, I am trying to make sure that these videos are properly captioned because I want as many people as possible to be able to engage with the material. Moving forward, the Plant of the Month classes will be available for Page of Wands patrons, which is $10 monthly tier, and for anyone in all of the higher tiers as well. For these classes, you have the option to join us live on the Zoom when I'm recording the class, and then those recordings of each class will be posted on Patreon for you to view at your leisure. if you're interested in signing up for these classes, please consider becoming a Rise Up Good Witch patron. Our next class is going to be about motherwort and linden, two plant friends who are very special to me. And it's going to be on Sunday, May 28th at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Zoom. If you're not a patron yet, but you are interested in checking out a recording of one of these first classes to kind of experience it and see what it's all about, shoot me a message on Instagram or an email, and I'm happy to share a class with you. One last quick Patreon announcement. The summer batch of Plant Witch boxes will be shipping out in June. If you are interested in a seasonal Plant Witch subscription box of several products from my business, Manatee Medicinals, you can sign up for a monthly pledge of $44 at the Benevolent Manatee tier. As a Benevolent Manatee, 3 to 4 times a year, you will receive a special goodie box in the mail with approximately 4 of my small batch herbal products. This can include CBD infused bath salties. This can include teas, tinctures, pain salve, massage oils, and other exceptionally unique herbal goods from my apothecary. I promise you I will make it worth your while. And also, folks at this tier, I'll do a check-in with folks before I send things out to make sure that what I'm sending you is going to be appropriate for like what you actually want or need. I know people have allergies and stuff. Okay, so now onto the episode. I had such a powerful and collaborative time putting this conversation together with today's guest, Chaney Williams, who reached out to me all the way back in February about being on the show. Chaney and I have just an uncanny amount in common for like not knowing each other previously. And I'm like so excited to call this person my friend now. And I'm so honored to be able to bring their experiences as a doula, writer, and Black queer Southerner to this space. I learned so much from them in our time together, and I am positive that you will too. So please join me in welcoming Chaney Williams of The Intersectional Doula. Hope you love it. Hello. Hi. Hi, Chaney.
Hello.
Hi there. Thank you so much for coming and being with us today. Welcome to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Me too. Chaney reached out to me interested in being on the show. And we have been meeting and emailing back and forth, for a couple of months now, and I'm so excited we could finally, in between climate change emergencies and other things, here we are. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. My name is Chaney Williams. I use she, they pronouns. I'm a queer, biracial, full spectrum doula and poet and writer. I don't know. What else do you want to know, I guess? That's all I have to say.
That's
a good intro.
I think that's a great intro. That's okay. Fine. That's the basics, you know?
Okay. I was like, those are the big things.
Yeah. And where are you? And you're based?
I'm based in Kentucky, central Kentucky.
Yeah. Right. Right on. And I am from Cincinnati, which is right. So I grew up 10 minutes across the river from Kentucky, right across the Ohio River. So I spent a fair bit of time in at least northern Kentucky. But it's so nice to chat with folks from closer to where I'm from. It's very grounding. And it turns out that we have a ton in common, despite not knowing each other, really. So it's been
I love that. Like when we made that connection.
Yeah, we got a lot of stuff in common. We're going to get into a bunch of it today. But you're mostly here to talk about your work and experiences in the doula and midwifery communities. So tell us about your, like, how you came into the work you're currently doing.
Okay. So when I was like 15, I ordered a zine from, I think it was Microcosm, which is like based in the Pacific Northwest. And the person who wrote the zine was actually doing their birth doula training. And I was like, what's a doula? Because I'd never heard of it. It was like 2005, 2006. And then I started really going deeply into like research about it because it felt like something I was really called to do. But I was also like 14 years old and I had a lot of experiences and different things like that to go through, I think, to be in a place where I was ready to be a doula and hold space for people in that way. So after I graduated with my undergrad in English and then also my MFA in creative writing poetry, around that time, I was like, the time is now. Like, I felt ready to hold space for people in that way and like have the capacity to.
Mm-hmm.
A really big part of that also was one of my best friends had a home birth a couple years before. And that learning about home birth more was a really big shift for me about like empowerment. And then what else? I did my full spectrum doula training with Global Doula Project, which was focused on loss, so like abortion and miscarriage. I did that first in 2018. And then the same year, that fall, I did my doula training for birth and postpartum care. And then from there, went into midwifery. Like, I was a student midwife for a while.
Wow. Yeah. Well, thank you for that overview. So when we were having our pre-production chat earlier this month, you were kind of walking me through some kind of, I realized how little I know about, about this field. And that there are a bunch of different kind of
avenues
and ways of approaching this and ways of being both kind of in and outside of like the hospital systems and also kind of the medical industrial complex. And we're going to talk more in depth about those things later, but yeah, maybe for like a broader strokes context, could you please walk us through like maybe to start with the definition or difference between a midwife and a doula?
So I always explain the difference between a doula and a midwife as the midwife is the person who actually catches the baby most of the time. Like, you can catch your own baby as well. Like, I'd like to add that in. But the midwife is there as the medical provider who's highly trained in the physiological processes of birth. Mm-hmm. And then the doula is the person who they are trained in a different capacity and a different scope. And they provide emotional and physical support during different aspects of pregnancy, or there's all kinds of doulas now, like there's sexuality doulas, there's gender doulas, but it really started with pregnancy and like the full scope of pregnancy.
Death
doula, death midwives, there's grief doulas, and then I guess there's also differences in midwives as well, which I think we talked about too. But like there's out-of-hospital providers who are certified professional midwives or sometimes also nurse midwives. So their scope is just kind of different and their training is different. So for in-hospital midwives who are they're nurse midwives. They have a nursing degree and then they go and get their they specialize in midwifery after getting their nursing degree. And then CPMs, which is certified professional midwives, they do home births and they have a totally different scope and training, but they're all very highly specialized and, what would I say? Like, trained to do the work they are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very kind of context.
Yeah, it's context based, and there's just different trainings and different education pathways, I would say. And that was really a big important thing for me when looking at getting into midwifery, because I knew I did not want to be a hospital-based midwife. Mm-hmm. I wanted to really focus on home birth, especially for BIPOC and other marginalized communities, because I feel like that's just what I was drawn to, because I could identify with it as well.
And yeah, there's so many nuances in seeking those different kinds of care. And I think we'll talk a little bit more about that in a bit. But mm-hmm. I'd love to hear kind of your, I know a handful of midwives and doulas in my life who also do other things. It kind of seems like there's a lot of range in like I have a friend who is a massage therapist and a yoga instructor. Mm-hmm. Cool. And a doula. And you know, doesn't do a whole lot of the midwife or doula work like full time. Yeah. But you know, works with one mother a month or something like that. Yeah. So it seems like there's full folks who do this like full time. Mm-hmm. And there's other folks who do this as more of kind of like a part-time sometimes thing.
Yeah. I think it really depends on, and we had kind of talked about, like, the burnout is really high. It's really, for some people, it's harder to be on call for multiple births a month, especially if you are a parent or a caregiver in other ways or have other things going on in your life. It's hard juggling that, which I can definitely relate to. It's also hard on the body being on call 24/7. So, like,
Yeah, that sounds insane. I can't imagine.
Yeah, and like it's incredible being in birth spaces, but sometimes you can be at a birth for like 4 days. You never know. You just don't know. And so it really puts things on pause, which is really wonderful when you're in this space because it's like very sacred and just incredible. But recovering from the birth, like your body physically and emotionally takes some time. And for me, I really figured out pretty quickly that like, I cannot be on call all the time. That is not for me. It's not sustainable for me.
Mm-hmm. And you talked about how intense the burnout was for you even before, mm-hmm. you know, doing this, super regularly, just in the studying of it and just getting in the door of starting to do this work and, you know, going through some pretty intense burnout from that.
Do you want me to go into it?
Okay. Sure. For me, how this looked like for you as a student, or I guess like, what do you wish you had known? Or what do you wish people had told you about before you started studying birth work formally?
I feel like something I wish people would have really told me was to really prioritize caring for myself and like doing really simple things like drinking water and making sure I was like eating regularly during births and stuff like that. Because you kind of get into like when you're in this like birth space, it's kind of hard to balance that because you're just like all in it, you know what I mean? And then for me also, I had a lot of different things going on in my life inside and outside of school. So my school I was at eventually shut down for various financial reasons and different things like that.
Yeah.
But the good thing about it is that I had really amazing preceptors who I learned really all my skills from, because when I started school, it was on Zoom because I started in like May, June, 2020. So it was like the peak of the pandemic.
Wow.
And it was like the beginning of the pandemic. So there was a lot of navigating and trying to figure out how to do things and how to do things on Zoom because I was a community-based student. So I was in a preceptorship in my community in Cincinnati, where you grew up, And then also, I was doing schoolwork all on Zoom. So, like, I've never met people in my cohort before who I was studying with.
Wow.
Like, I know them from Zoom and we still talk, and I'm really grateful for that. But I got out before our school shut down. I took a pause because I was really burned out because of some things that were going on in my life, like trauma-wise, that I needed to focus on. So I think, like, the big thing for me is with taking care of yourself, like, listening to yourself and your body, because I wish I would have, like, taken time to rest before it got too into the place where I was like, okay, I'm really burnt out.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Like, they don't, it depends on the school, as I would say, but, like, a lot of the routes, it's not an, like, something you can access.
That's awful. I had no idea. It is awful. it's such a crucial and important.
Yeah. And it's a barrier to people. And that's, like, the big thing is it's such a barrier to people to get that education. And that's why there's such a lack of more midwives, because there's not really a system in place to support them as well. From being student midwives, but also to being in midwifery for a long time, like for the long run, a lot of people burn out after like 5 or 10 years.
Which still sounds like a long time of doing it to me.
It is.
Sounds like a long time. And your experience in, when we were talking about this before, is like almost note for note, your experience in midwifery school is so similar to my experience in massage school, where I also, like, I had to take a break and I had to take time off for like a lot of personal trauma stuff. And also discovering, you know, like, as a disabled person, what my limitations were. And I was lucky to have, like, I did have a lot of really good, like, ethics and avoiding burnout kind of training. Like, they do talk about that a lot, but they also, you know, the base level is assuming that you're an able-bodied person and don't have any health issues that you're managing. And so for me, kind of similar to you, like, I didn't really ever have any, I was always planning to do this, like, part-time, and to figure out how to, navigate it. Of course, massage therapist, you're not on call 24/7. and it's a different kind of emotional work.
And emotionally. And, like, the thing I was thinking about, like, when you were talking about the disability piece as well, is, like, I got diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, like, the year I got into midwifery school. And it was also during the pandemic.
Oh my gosh.
Accessing care was really hard. I'm like,
That's so scary.
It is scary. But I think the big piece was, like, learning how to take care of myself and really advocate for myself, which is something I always say people shouldn't have to do. But it's a skill I think that I've really had to hone in on, especially as a doula, like, with those experiences. So that's been helpful, advocating for myself and, like, dueling myself in different ways. Which I think has been, like, a really big piece for me, especially with, like, taking a break from doula work now, because my body is like, you need to rest.
Mm-hmm. It's just, it's painful and it's harmful when, as, like, caring, empathetic healer people who want to help others, not feeling super supported in these school environments that aren't necessarily set up to help
for you,
succeed. Say again?
For you to succeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. To succeed or to, well, especially for, like, Black people and for BIPOC practitioners. There's so many layers of, like, ignorance, just, like, down to the textbooks, you know, down to, like, the source material of how they're teaching this work. And then it sort of, pun intended, it sort of trickles down, like, into the greater work of the systems and of the whole network of practitioners around somebody giving birth or somebody being in the hospital. I've been thinking about that a lot in terms of, like, have you seen, not to get off topic, but I just keep thinking about how, like, I don't remember how many, it was like hundreds of people got like fake nursing degrees in Florida.
Oh yeah. Like, during the pandemic.
Oh my god.
Like, they're still doing it. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just thinking about like how many people fucking so died. Horrible. Like, yeah. Or like sustained great harm because of,
they just paid for the degree and they didn't work or have any of the education or training to support people. And that's, when I read about that, I was just like shocked. But also, unfortunately, it made sense because there's such a crisis. It didn't make sense in like a way where I was like, oh, I get why you would do that. But it made sense in the way that like our system is so flawed that of course people are doing that to become a nurse or different providers or stuff like that.
Well, of all things to do that for, though, I mean, like, of all professions, shiesty and awful and scary that, like, you're in charge of people's bodies and, like, health and well-being and safety.
Well, such an ethical issue, too. Like, I don't know how you, like, navigate being like, okay, this is something I want to do.
Being like, okay, I'm a phlebotomist now. I'm sure I'll figure it out.
Yeah, because we've had cases of people in Kentucky who had done it too. And that was just like, oh my gosh. Like, I think my thing, especially when I was in like my preceptorship, is I was like overly cautious about causing harm, like in a way where like I would be afraid to touch people at first. And like, even though I had like done my like, hey, is it okay if I like touch your stomach to like palpate or something like that? And it became something I got used to. But I think because of my trauma lens and things that have happened to my body, it was so hyperactive where I was so afraid of like causing accidental harm to someone. So I can't imagine being on the other side of that, being like, oh, I'm a nurse now. I have this fake degree.
And just being fine with that. Like, yo, yeah, I know we all need money, so but neglectful. Hey.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing I thought about when I first read about it too was there was such, and there still is a medical provider nursing crisis as there is with teachers. And it's like, I wonder why that is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah. It's not like our systems are just fully broken, just foundationally.
Yeah. There's no support for anyone.
Oh, and I don't know, is somebody with a lot of medical trauma and also like just years of, you know, kind of desperately seeking care for managing like chronic health issues.
Yeah.
I'm just terrified at the idea of being in the hands of somebody who, I don't know, is a counterfeit watch of a nurse like this.
Yes, yeah. And like, I relate to that a lot, especially with my diabetes diagnosis, but also like the recent health issues I've had with like my GI stuff. There was just a lot of medical negligence, which I was aware of and expecting, but I think it's really triggering and traumatizing to think about someone being like, and I'm a nurse now, here I am. And like causing that harm and honestly, intentionally.
Oh yeah. I feel like once you get the fake degree and you like start practicing you're intentionally doing harm, which is like the thing you say that you're the one thing that you're like, do no harm. You're like actively causing harm if that's harm, what you're up.
Yeah.
That's what you're up to. Please don't do that.
Yeah, please do not.
The world at large.
For everyone. Please do not do that.
Please practice within your scope of legal practice.
Yes.
Well, that's like, we don't have to go too far into it necessarily. Because I actually do you know, you and I are in conversation about having another episode about with like different Black midwives stories, specifically midwives and doulas. But maybe we could talk a little bit about that health, these disparities in terms of like severe, you know, Black mothers and parents and people being getting just the high. Yeah, not getting the care.
The abuse and the mistreatment.
Yeah, the abuse, the mistreatment, the neglect that we, you know, we have statistics about. Yeah. We talk about it, but also, like, especially with the existence of long COVID now, there's even more. I feel like things are more dire. I'm curious to hear your perspective or any like information you have about those health disparities and what we're needing in a new paradigm of healthcare.
So I feel like the big thing is like it's not a quick and easy fix, as we know, because there's so many different systems in place that are fractured and broken and are working the way they were supposed to. But I think there's little things we can do. So like for people who don't know, there's a lot of different health disparities with BIPOC folks and other marginalized communities, especially in the healthcare system, especially when receiving care in the hospital system, which thankfully that we're becoming more aware about and talking about, because used to it was very like swept under the rug and still is in a lot of ways, but I think it's getting more news track about what's going on and people are looking out for it. There's more people who are receiving medical advocacy and like patient advocacy trainings, but I mean, there's just there's so many cases of Black and brown people who have been pregnant and have received care that has been abusive, mistreatment. Black and brown people who are dying in hospital settings because they know something is wrong, but they act like the providers or the medical system acts like they're being too outspoken, and then it ends up that there was something definitely wrong, like they said, and then the person ends up dying out of the fact that the medical providers did not listen to them because they were like a Black or brown person, and because of that they didn't actually listen to them for the reason that they thought they were being like angry or different stereotypes like that, or like making a big deal out of nothing, or like questioning. I think one of the biggest ways we can fix the system is access to education for not only providers, but also for patients and clients themselves. There's a lot of people who are doing a lot of work on violence in the hospital system against Black and brown bodies, but also, like, I think the big thing that I really learned from being in midwifery school and being a doula is that it's not one fix. It takes a lot of people, the collective, doing work together. And it takes a lot of systems changing and shifting and evolving and being broken down and dismantled. And right now, unfortunately, we are not at the place where we are doing that. And we're slowly making steps towards it, which is amazing and very hopeful. But some of the things that I like think about is like the access to education, access to community resources for not just patients and clients, but also providers, because there's so much burnout. Access to the education part, like I was saying, like accessibility for people who may not be able to afford the education, which I relate to a lot. And also the community care aspect of people receiving care from other networks or resources, like therapists for people who are providers. That's not expensive, because that's a really big thing that I've seen with friends who are just nurses. Like, they only get, like, their insurance is awful. It's really bad. And, like, And those are for people who are lucky enough to have insurance. So I think it takes like a really big systemic shift, but it takes a collective doing the work together.
Mm-hmm. Are there folks or organizations who you see moving towards that kind of work currently?
I would say the more people speak up about the systemic violences that are happening, I feel like there's a lot of organizations that are slowly making the shift. But it also seems like there a lot of them aren't wanting to really do the work. It's just for like getting the diversity badge, like check, we do the diversity thing. We made this post or whatever. And that's really disheartening. But there's a lot of great organizations, especially dual organizations, that are doing really great things. One of them that I always tell people about is BADT, which is Birthing Advocacy. And the person who is in charge, like the founder of that, is Sabia Wade. And they just wrote a really great book about, I'm trying to think of what it's called. It's about liberation and birth. But Sabia is just doing really powerful, transformative work about, especially for doulas and other care providers in the birth realm, about really prioritizing yourself and rest and doing everything from like harm reduction trainings and their doula trainings and stuff like that, which I think was something I did not receive when I became a doula. And I really wish their organization existed when I was a doula, like when I first started out, when I first got trained. So I'm really glad they're around, like that she's doing this work. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like the big one I always think about, especially in the birth world, because I think it starts small and then it ripples out like we were talking about.
So for any folks listening who might be pregnant or considering giving birth someday, where does one start in seeking out doulas or midwives to work with? Or like, what can that process look like?
So I definitely think a great place to start for finding a doula is if you know anyone, word of mouth is great. Like anyone who's used a doula before, but also there's a site called Doula Match, where basically how it works is you put in the distance, like what you're looking for in a doula. There's all these bios and profiles, and it's kind of like a dating app for doulas in that way, which is funny. But you're able to find a doula who could be like, they are Black and Brown, or they're a queer doula, or they specialize in helping like families who are doing surrogacy or different things like that. Another great place is looking in your community Facebook groups, like home birth groups or birth groups, just like in your area. A lot of areas have that. I know like Cincinnati and Kentucky do. A big thing I always tell people is when looking for a doula or a midwife is like to shop around. Don't just go for the first person you meet, like talk to a bunch of different midwives and doulas to see who is the best fit for you and that you really align and get each other, because they're going to be at your birth or for whatever scope of pregnancy you are in. And that's so important. And you want someone that you can really trust and that you like vibe with, and having a like list of questions to ask as well. Like, how would you handle this? Or like, what kind of births have you attended? Like, have you done VBACs, which is like a vaginal birth after cesarean, if that's something you're doing? And just meeting the person for like coffee or on FaceTime or something like that, which is really normal. Most people, their consults are free, and they'll do that because it's important to meet the person first before signing the contract.
Wow, I had no idea. Yeah, that is all news to me. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Those are all great resources. Is there, I'm so curious about the in-system bias, like with medical doctors around like working with midwives or doulas or having them be a part of the birthing process. Because I don't know, my perspective is like, as a student of massage was like,
yeah.
And like massage therapy has only been seen as like legitimate and, you know, it's been licensable. Like you can get your license or certification depending on what state you're in for like a long, long time, decades and decades. But in terms of like our society in the US actually opening their arms to it and doctors being like, it is within the realm of possibility that you could go for this chronic pain issue that isn't going away to your doctor. And your doctor would say the sentence like, oh, have you ever thought about getting a massage? Like, have you considered that? Only now, like in the last like 20 years, has it become something that isn't considered a totally left field, quote unquote, alternative healthcare modality.
Yeah.
It's, you know, being seen as a legitimate thing. And I imagine that the realms of doula and midwifery work is somewhat similar.
It is really similar. I feel like it's becoming more known that it's like a thing that like doula work is something that is like statistically shown to help improve birth outcomes. And I think more providers in the hospital are getting more aware about that. But a lot of people, especially with like the home birth realm, are like, you're doing a what? Like, why would you do that? Like by choice? And like, what would happen if this happens? And how do you get medical care? And like, the thing is I think people aren't aware that like midwives are highly trained. They go to school. They've specialized in this. This is what people have been doing since the beginning of time, is giving birth at home. And just in the last 100 years has it become a thing where we give birth at hospitals as a whole, overwhelmingly. Like, I think people, there's this disconnect, which is on purpose from the medical industrial complex, where people don't see midwifery or doulas as like highly trained professionals, I would say. And like you were talking about the massage therapy part, it's like, oh, are you a hippie? Like, it's like that. They see it like that. And I don't know. It's really a disservice, especially to patients and clients who want those services, but there's not a lot of education from medical providers in the hospital system about that.
Yeah, I'm so curious about what that would even look like. Like, let's say you're giving birth in a hospital and you have a midwife and a doula. How do those healthcare professionals then interact with the medical team, like in the hospital?
So do you mean, okay, so there's a different couple of different scenarios it could be. So I'm going to put them out there. Do you mean if, it's a not in hospital midwife, like not a CNM, like not someone who works at the hospital, coming to the hospital with someone like a transfer, like a home birth transfer, like something went wrong. Is that what you mean? Or like,
oh,
just,
I guess, yeah. I mean, I guess, any scenario,
any, okay.
So or like, what are the different scenarios of how the team would like interact with the, with the, the MD overseeing the birth at the hospital, for example.
Okay. So I would say it depends on what the scenario is and what the relationship is before. So if you are someone who is giving birth in a birth center in a hospital that is an all nurse midwifery care team, that would look very different. I feel like I know. From if you were someone who had a home birth and you had to be transferred to the hospital, the care would be very different, because depending on if the midwives had established care, like there's a thing called parallel care that some midwives do, where they have, if they need a transfer for a home birth, they have someone who has been receiving care like every couple weeks and seeing a medical provider like an OB. So that would be a totally different, I think, scenario. But I think it depends on the level of pushback, especially with the individual provider, like what they know. And so I think a really big important thing is providing providers education, like OBs, about home birth and also doulas and midwives and what they do and how they are trained to do that. And I think a lot, some OBs know that, but I'd say there's kind of like a backlash sometimes. And I think a thing that's really helpful, and like one of my more established doula friends when I was starting out told me to do this, was when I would go to a new hospital to introduce myself before the birth. So it wasn't just like, hey, here I am. I'm here and you've never met me before.
Yeah.
And just to establish a relationship with the care team, letting the care team know there would be a doula there. Sometimes I would bring cookies and be like, hi, I'm Janie. Like, I will be here in like a couple of weeks or like 4 weeks or whatever at some point, because my client is giving birth here and I just want to introduce myself and like let you know who I am, that kind of thing. And I think that's really helpful. Like, I don't know. But I think what you were saying, it really depends on the scenario that you are coming into or has been established care-wise. Because I think people are more afraid of the unknown, and like there's kind of like a shock, like if they don't really know anything about home birth. So I think a really big piece about it is providing education about how safe home birth is, because it is. Like, there's a scope where if you have some kind of complication, you risk out of care, so you are transferred to a medical provider. Home birth is only for people who are low risk, who it doesn't put them or their baby in danger.
Right. And what is, could you give an example of like somebody who would be higher risk, who wouldn't be able to have a home birth?
I'll use myself as an example. I am a type 2 diabetic. Diabetes would risk you out of care, because with diabetes, there's just so many more complications. It can really mess with your glucose while you're pregnant. So I would need to be with someone who is highly trained for high-risk pregnancies, like an OB. That's what I would need. Yeah.
Okay.
So one, if you have like a bleeding disorder or something like that, there's a whole a lot of different scopes, like list of things that could risk you out of care. Or if you have like preeclampsia or something like that.
I want to go like higher up in this conversation to talk about, not about the farm, but about, so when we spoke before, you were telling me some pretty fascinating stuff that I was fully unaware of about, just about the generational divide that has happened within midwifery and doula work, that was like catalyzed by these women who were working in the 70s and 80s in this field. And it's kind of created this ongoing divide that includes, it's very kind of a second wave feminism, very turfy holdovers, that kind of blending with new ageism, and also like kind of proto fascism and neoliberal ideologies, like how that, maybe you could talk a little bit about like how that is currently manifesting, or like how it's interwoven into both the like educational side of doula midwife work, and also, yeah, like how families and parents could be impacted by it.
I would say there's a really big divide, like you were talking about, not just with midwives who are older or like elder midwives, I would say, who are like from a different generation, but also just in general, there's this big divide between the fact that some midwives or birth workers do not see, they don't see trans people as receiving the ability to be pregnant, which is harmful because that is not true. And there's just this really big divide, especially in the educational system as well, over language. Like, I use birthing people. There are people who use very like mother-centric language, and they're like, this is like, you are a goddess, that kind of thing. Like that kind of feminism, I would say, which is totally fine if that is something you want to relate to as the goddess imagery, but the transphobia is so harmful and it's so isolating, and it's not, it's affecting certain people's ability to receive care. Mm-hmm. That is the care they deserve and need. I think there's a shift as there's just like this divide between people who are like the goddess centric, mother based, like birth work people. And then there's the people who are really making strides to making it inclusive and equitable for everyone receiving care. And that is the big thing. And so even in like the different systems you could go to receive education, you can see that by looking at their websites, like how they use language. A lot of people are shifting, which is great, mm-hmm. but it's still like a learning curve. But it's just so harmful because people aren't receiving the access to care they deserve and need, because there's not... For a lot of people, there's like these droughts in areas where they don't have midwives or care providers who see their identity and who they are as being real, which is problematic and harmful.
Yeah. And I don't know. I'm thinking a lot about this. I just had this really wonderful conversation with Bruna Morshaw about, you know, they're also based in the South. They're in Tennessee, mm-hmm. and talking about these trans healthcare bans, and there's this, you know, really obnoxious conservative obsession about like the pronoun thing, quote unquote, the pronoun thing. And this is so about so much more than like, your team doesn't need a, you know, pronoun workshop. To like we're at the eradication stage of like we're at a different stage of like genocide than like, and it's really difficult because it's like, as you're speaking about, like language really matters, it really does, and also like getting caught up in the semantics of like just pronouns, like this is so much more.
It's not just pronouns.
It's not. It's about like,
I have my hands over my eyes. But I'm just like, it's so frustrating, and that's what it comes back to constantly for them.
Well, and I think it's like the broader thing is like, you don't have an issue with pronouns. You're not confused by pronouns. You're confused because you are up against a wall where you can't see beyond it. You can't actively see that, like, you know, your child has become somebody different than like who they were when they were born.
Yes.
Or like, you can't perceive, your head is fucking exploding because you can't understand that like somebody who's giving birth might not want to be called a mother, or might not be empowered by like feathery goddess language, you know?
Yes.
It's so important to talk about this and about the actual like lived experience of what that harm can look like, or how it shows up in, you know, just thinking about losing trans healthcare in like Tennessee or in Florida or anywhere else, like it doesn't just mean like, oh, like, you know, your kid can't get access to hormones or like can't get access to a medication that they need. Like, what if it means like your trans kid, what if your trans kid gets pregnant when they're 16 or 17 and then has to go, can't get an abortion because you fucking outlawed that too. And then they have to go through the trauma of like not being able to access care that like respects and like honors who they are. Like just the, there's so many, like we could, you know, could go on and on about like all the different iterations of how this can actually show up. But just that it's about more than, you know, it was the abortion bans. It's never about abortion. It's never being about like saving lives. It's about controlling people's bodies, right?
Yes, it's about choice. It's about dictating people's autonomy over their own body.
Yeah. And I think why things like, you know, things like trans friendly healthcare providers or midwives or any adjacent field,
like lactation consultants, that kind of thing.
Gender neutral, using gender neutral language, like to refer to people. I think all of that is very, anything that helps us heal is threatening to the greater like oppressive powers that be, right? Because us, anything that connects us with our bodies, anything that allows us to be who we are or express ourselves as our truest selves, it's all very threatening because because it means our autonomy. It means that like
we have sovereignty over ourselves.
I guess this could go back to your personal, like your why of like why you're doing this work, or why you're pursuing this field in general.
Let's see. I think, and we talked about this previously, but I think originally when I started out, and it's still the same route, but I've realized, I think it takes the collective. It can't just be me alone. So that's why it's really important to me that there's more access to people who, there's so many people who want to become midwives or doulas and they don't have access to the funds or education to. And I think that's how we change the system moving forward, especially with birth work and just the medical industrial complex, is having more providers who represent their patients and clients who look like them, who they can get the things and they have the knowledge. And also it's really important to me that it feels like a calling, which is always a weird word I feel like to use because that's usually what nuns use. But like, it's not a calling for me in that way, obviously, but it's something that I've always felt called to do. And even though my body was really burnt out for a really long time, and I'm dealing with a lot of physical different like abilities, like my body's abilities changing, and there is so much burnout in midwifery itself, I love it so much. Like there's something very sacred and powerful about seeing a patient or client empower themselves to take back their birth. If they've been like a VBAC or something like that, if they've had a really different medical experience from like their birth experience has changed, and providing tools so they can empower themselves. But also the big thing, I think, like when you were asking about advice, is realizing that it takes all of us, like the collective as a whole, doing the work together, and also not having a savior complex about it, where you feel like you can save everyone because it's not realistic. It leads to burnout. It's also harmful. And I think, I don't think I have like a savior complex coming into it, but I think a lot of people have different roots of why they want to do this work. And for me, it's because I want there to be more representation and people who get my marginalized identities to have that reflected back to them and just have access to care, which they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, I miss being in birth spaces so much. Like, I think about it all the time. I have dreams about it. And even though it's paused right now, I know that I will come back to it because it is something it gives me joy in this world. It does. And like, this is a time when there is not a huge amount of joy in a lot of different ways. There's a lot of grief, but watching the different scopes of pregnancy and seeing like new life come into the world, that does give me joy.
Mm.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
Being in the midst of any sort of program of study, like any type of school, like during the pandemic, right? It's been so disruptive to so many of our lives. And the path that we were on, the thing that we thought was going to be our thing, like maybe that isn't your thing. Maybe you don't have access to that thing. Maybe you don't, you can't do the work that you want to do. And for me, like the constant pivoting has been exhausting, but it's also like led me to what I'm doing right now, which is amazing, which I'm really enjoying. Mm. And I also like really, I hit my own wall of being so upset that I couldn't do the thing that I set out to do. And I just keep getting pushed back into being an educator and teaching people about herbalism and about self-massage and about nervous system work. So that's like kind of what I'm developing in my own life is like, okay, well, I can't do that thing, but I think I actually really, I would love to teach massage someday. And when you're talking about these disparities and these systemic issues with the educational system of how are these healing practitioners being informed about the systemic racism, the systemic harm. And the answer to me seems like, among many other things you talked about, seems like having some BIPOC teachers, you know, having a more diverse body of people actually like writing new textbooks that have, you know, that have more inclusive language, that include specific information about these health disparities and about like Black parent like death rates in hospitals, about all of it. And I don't know. I think you'd make a great teacher.
Thank you. I'm like, my mind has been like blown right now. So I'm like, I never thought about that aspect of it. I've thought about teaching in like a lot of other ways, but mostly it's not been that way, like that lens, which is fascinating that my brain didn't go there. I'm like sitting with it right now, like thinking about it. And I will probably continue thinking about it for a while and be like, huh. Because I think my thing about teaching and why I have it sounds not odd, but like I have an easier time teaching children than adults. And that is because I think I get really anxious teaching adults, which I don't know. I think there's a bunch of different factors to it, but I think it's because kids are they're not judgmental in the way that adults are, and they're very honest in a way that I really love. Mm-hmm. And like kids are, but also you can be really silly with kids and they're not gonna be like, why are you doing that weird voice or whatever like that. But yeah, that's a totally different capacity with birth work I haven't thought about. Yeah. But I love it.
Yeah. And I mean, I think there's so many different with your experience. Yeah. There's with your experience, you have an English degree, you know, contributing to textbooks, like writing papers for like scientific or like health journals, research, or like helping, if you like working with kids, like finding doula work to like work with families who already have children, like adjust.
Yeah.
To,
and that's a thing. That's a thing. Yeah. There's a lot of, they call it sibling doulas.
Oh, wow.
That's yeah, so which sweet. Is really amazing. And like on Doula Match, what I was talking about, the website where you can find doulas online, they have like a box where you're like, I'm a sibling doula. Like I will hang out with your kiddos while you are doing your home birth or whatever is going on. And I love that too. I think because of the place I've been in the last couple of years with like my body and stuff like that, a lot of my teaching is really shifting more into like grief doula work and like those kind of offerings, like from that lens, and like focusing on different other thresholds. Because birth is definitely an amazing threshold, but my body is not wanting, it's not wanting, it's having me listen to it and be like, you need to pause that right now. And so I'm listening to it in a lot of different ways. But I think like the next thing for me really is looking more at like holding space in other capacities until I go back to school to be a midwife. Yeah.
I think if you just keep following that, you know, like follow the dopamine. Follow.
Yep, That's what it is.
Follow what is like, what's calling you. And I think you're gonna, it's really hard being, and I'm not saying this from a place of ego, but just like, this is my family. This is my lineage. Like, this is where I'm from. Like, it's hard being a change maker. It's hard being somebody who, when you're doing something that nobody's done before in exactly, you know, the way that you do it or the way that you're approaching it. There's not a guide for it. You know, there's not a manual. Yeah, it's isolating.
It can be very isolating.
Everybody's telling you you're doing it wrong. You're like, well, that's not the way it's done. Or like, why would you do it like that?
I'm lucky in the sense that I have a lot of community who are also change makers. And like, that's great. And I love that. And I'm very appreciative for it. But I also have a couple family members. And we call each other like cycle breakers.
Mm-hmm.
We're really working on the generational trauma aspect and like ancestral grief, which is amazing. And I'm lucky to be on that path with them, especially like my chosen family and like my family by blood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot. I think it's a good thing that there's a lot of questioning I do of myself, because it brings an awareness. And like, I think when you were talking about the ego part, being like, I'm not trying to say this in an egotistical way. I think having like that discernment, like you were talking about, and being like the awareness of being like, yes, I am a change maker, but this is hard and it can be isolating, and like it's building new paths with other people as well.
And we're not alone in it too.
Yes, and that's the thing. There's so many other people who are doing it in different ways and capacities. And that's what gives me hope.
Mm-hmm.
That's what gives me hope and joy. And especially seeing like the younger generations who are doing so much amazing work, and even elder generations who are older than us who have been change makers in their own ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It gives me a lot of hope too. And thanks for saying that. This is a great little segue to talk about like what I would love for you to give some context for where you are physically in the world right now and what you are working on, because that's how you opened our chat together today. And I would love to hear more about it.
Okay. I am back for my art residency with Kentucky Foundation for Women. I'm at a convent in like central Kentucky where they are also change makers, and they also, I don't know, they're just doing really radical, amazing work with social justice. And like, it gives me hope as well, because it's a community, a retirement community of nuns. And
so cool.
I know, it's so amazing.
Just so, I'm just at my radical nun art residency. No big deal.
Well, it's funny because I don't think they would see themselves as radical. Mm-hmm. They're just doing what is right in their hearts, which is like, they're very humble. And like the first time I was here, which was last year, I met this nun who is from my area where I grew up, and she was really excited to meet me. But like, we have this really great bonding moment because she was wearing a Black Lives Matter shirt. Mm-hmm. And it was also the day of the Breonna Taylor indictment in Louisville, with like, wow, the case that had gone on. And she was going around, and she was like going up to everyone, and she'd be like, "Have you heard?" And they'd be like, "Have we heard what?" And I didn't know at the time like what she was talking about. And she was just so joyful that there had been justice served, and like in that way. But also she was talking about how it should have never happened. And she's like 85 years old. Mm-hmm. So like seeing that kind of work being done, and also like this side of Catholicism, which is kind of different from how I grew up, where they're really making amends and doing the work of the harm that Catholicism has caused over the years, and acknowledging it and apologizing for it, is huge. Like, it's been really healing for my religious trauma.
I can only imagine. It's so cool.
Named after my sixth great grandmother, who was an enslaved woman born in 1826, Cheney Chambers. And so I'm writing about the grief and joy that exists in both of those identities, and like reckoning and like making peace with not the past, I would say, but like all those sides and how we move forward. That's what I'm working on while I'm here.
Mm. That's so incredible. And it's so close to home for me. And so similar to my background as well. And I'm really excited for you.
Thank you.
What a great opportunity. Yeah, of course it's scary. It's not.
But I'm excited. I don't know. Like, I feel that is like something else I'm also called to do, is to like write this. And I've felt that way for a long time. And so I think that is also why birth work is kind of paused as well, because I need to get this out. Like,
yeah.
In my head and yeah, out of my body.
Absolutely. I think that'll be really huge for you. And yeah, when we have these heavy, I think it's this whole other layers really, and like levels of work that specifically as descendants of enslaved people, to not only like reconcile our like day-to-day lives with how heavy carrying that in our bodies is,
the bone memory,
with the, you know, knowledge of the acknowledgement of like epigenetics and what it means to like carry trauma throughout generations. But then we, you know, some of us have both the burden and the gift of the opportunity to like unearth those personal histories and to dig into it and do that, you know, do that research. And even if that means taking a stupid ancestry DNA test that is going somewhere where they're going to do questionable things with our like Like, I literally haven't done my 23andMe test. It's been sitting on a bookshelf for years because I'm like, I feel fucked up about it. Yeah. But I'm also like, yes, I would love to know where my people are really from.
Mine is sitting in a suitcase since like December 2020. I just haven't done it because I don't know. I guess it's for similar reasons.
Yeah, we should take them together, see what we find out. there's a fun introductory friend body doubling activity. Do you want to take our ancestry test together?
Here we go.
That'll be a hoot. The stories, there are unknown stories that we carry around with us. There are known stories that we carry around with us. And I'm proud of you for like getting this cool radical non-residency to take some time to yourself and rest and heal and, you know, really work on this book.
I don't know. The thing like that keeps on coming up for me is like a big theme in the work I'm working on right now. Is like remembering is how we heal and move forward. Like remembering the past and like honoring it and like really sitting with it. Because I think growing up biracial, in a lot of ways, I didn't do that. And I felt very othered a lot. And so really like the past 10 years, I've been more present with my identity in a way that I don't know. Like, I feel connected more to my ancestors on both sides. Yeah.
Mm. I'm glad. I'm trying to get there. I'm hoping to.
It's a constant evolving thing, I feel like, too. And I don't think I was ready to do it before.
Yeah. Mm. It makes sense. I mean, it's not like, I don't know. We all have complicated histories and complicated ancestries, but I feel like some are more complex than others. And like when you're carrying a particularly tangled load of intergenerational trauma around with you, you like, I don't know, people be busy and like, you know, you're not always in the headspace to like, to sit down and confront it or let yourself like really tell your stories.
Yes. And like, I don't know, like even writing this while I'm here, I take like a nap a day during the afternoon after I write for like 4 or 5 hours because it's draining in a way. Like, and taking care of myself and my body, like the thing I do is I take a nap at like 3 or 4 because writing about it is really heavy, but in a really way that's really transformative for me. But like a thing I do is I take a nap and I also always write with water. Like I have a glass of water next to me because that helps. But yeah, I mean, it's heavy work, but I'm glad to be doing the work and I'm glad you're doing the work too.
Thank you. Thanks. I'm actually going to be going on my first artist residency.
Tell me more.
Next month.
Sorry, I like leaned over. I was so excited.
Yes.
Can't see you.
I'm really, really excited. It's with one of my favorite authors, which makes me feel insane. I'm like frothing at the mouth. I'm so excited. but I'm going to the coast in a few weeks from now. With corporeal writing, which is Lydia Yuknovich's like literary organization, and there were only a couple scholarships. I got a full scholarship. I'm gonna go. Thank you. I haven't left Portland in like almost a year. I'm glad that this is on the coast and we can drive out there. But yeah, I'm gonna go spend 4 days and. Just write and eat and be away from my pets and my partner who I love, but also this has been a very long pandemic for us and sometimes you really have to be outside of like the context of your day-to-day life to actually get a significant creative project like going, especially writing. So Thank you.
Do you know what you're going to be working on, if I may ask?
possibly. You don't have to talk about it if you don't want to. No, I'm not fully sure. I am also, I'm revisiting the scraps of what will be my first book. Which is just like this series of essays that I've been writing for like, you know, over a decade at this point. So I think I'm going to be working on that, but I'm also just going to, I'm kind of going to let it be open-ended.
Yeah. That makes sense. That's smart.
It's a retreat with other people. So there's like generative, there's a meditation every day, and then there's like a workshop every day. And the focus is about trees, actually, and about like trees.
I'm so excited for you.
Thank you.
You're going to tell me more about it too, like after you come back. So I would love to hear about your experience.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll have plenty to say.
the tree aspect of it too. That sounds incredible.
Yeah, it's called Seed Sitka Self, and it's all about learning from like tree ancestors and plant ancestors and about interconnected like root networks. It's like coming from that place, and I'm not fully sure what that will mean for like what I'm writing about or how I'm writing about it, but that's kind of the container that they're Say again.
It'll come out. It'll show the way it's supposed to come out.
Yeah. It will. I'm letting it be open-ended, but well, thank you for letting me talk about that. I encourage folks to apply.
My hands. I'm so excited.
To have more than like a day to myself to just to not stress about house stuff or chores or pets or like any of it. I'm trying to really push myself to apply for a lot more artist grants and residencies to start getting back into like not just this podcast and the work that I'm doing around it, but you know, all the other creative parts of myself too.
Same. Cause it's so important, and like a lot of getting back into my creative practice the last couple of years has been really healing for me and like grounding, and like helps me feel really rooted to myself. And like while I was in midwifery school, I didn't write for over a year, which is wild because I've always written, like even journaling and stuff like that. So I'm glad you are getting back into the practice of it as well. And I'm excited to see what you create.
Thanks. Thank you so much. Me too. I think it's about our time to wrap up here. Where can people find you? Where can people find, you said that you're, you were launching something in March, or?
I didn't.
That's fine.
I started doing this like, I'm like, I pushed it back till April. I'm doing this really great like class right now that I also got a school scholarship to that I'm really loving, but it's talking about moving your brand in quotation marks off of social media, which is important to me because social media got really overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm moving to Ghost, the like content creator platform there. But as of right now, the best place to find me is on Instagram, and I will be adding updates as I make my slow exit off of the gram.
Yeah, I'm interested in that class. I hate social media, and I am not good at it. I don't like upkeeping it.
I do like really strict boundaries around it, and like I got off social media for like 3 or 4 months, so. I don't know. I just felt a lot better being off social media, but I miss like the community aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
It seems like that's the way a lot of creators are going, is creating other spaces.
Yeah. Like I want something that feels more authentic to me and doesn't stress me out the way social media does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the best place to find me right now is the Intersectional Doula on Instagram.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. And are there any, do you have anything coming up that you want to talk about or plug or Anywhere else you want to direct folks?
I just had a piece with Salty Magazine come out, which is cool, and I'm excited about. It goes more into like me dueling myself and like prioritizing rest. So I'm excited about that. I'm launching the new like thing off of social media on Ghost, which I'll have updates on Instagram about as I do my slow exit, like I mentioned. I feel like I'm missing something, but I can't think of it right now.
Well, that's okay. We will include links to these things in the show notes as well. Oh, it was so wonderful chatting with you today. Thank you so much for all of this wisdom and insight. Really appreciate you.
Thank you for your time and energy. I enjoyed it so much.
This was lovely. All right. Thank you. Okay.
Thanks for listening to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to directly support the creation and production of more important conversations about tarot, art, activism, herbal medicine, wellness culture, astrology, and more, please do consider joining our Patreon, where you can sign up for a monthly contribution as low as $2 a month at patreon.com/riseupgoodwitchremix. That's remix with two X's. Not in a place to contribute financially? I get it. Here are some totally free ways to support the livelihood of this important project, which are just as valuable. Leave us a review. Follow us on Instagram @_riseupgoodwitch444. Share the show or link to your favorite episode on social media. Tell a friend or family member about us. Word of mouth is crucial for a scrappy DIY show like ours, and it's how a lot of people get connected in. Thanks again to everyone for all of your support, and I will see you again next time. Bye.